Hi friends, this is Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for downloading this sermon from Heritage Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. Our mission is to lead others to a thriving relationship with Jesus, and if you're ready to take a next step in your faith journey after you listen to this message, you can contact us through our website at www.heritagechurchofchrist.org. God bless you, and I hope you enjoy the following message.
Well, I am excited to be with you this morning, and I know there's a number of you that are here, maybe for the first time or for the first time in a while, and you need to know we're wrapping up a message series that's been going on for the last 7 Sundays this morning. It's called The Power of Love, and we would be thrilled for you to be caught up on that content at some point, and so you can download the Heritage smartphone app by texting HCOC app to 77977, or you can find that on our website, heritagechurchofchrist.org, and you can listen to that content and get caught up on what this has been all about. But as we've been making our way through this 8-week series, we have been looking at some of the incredible ways that God showed His love for humanity in the stories that we find in Scripture, as well as some of the ways that God continues to reveal and demonstrate His love for humanity even in the present day. In fact, one of the themes of this entire series has been that God is continually showing His love for the world and channeling that through His representatives here on earth. Now, how many of you in the room have ever had a negative customer service experience? All right, so you know how critical a representative's behavior can change, how critically that can change your impression of a company, a restaurant, a business, or a school, or something like that. You understand that when someone puts on a shirt with the logo, when someone has a business card that represents a company, when someone comes and says, "May I take your order?" that they're representing an organization. A few years ago, I hired a company to come to my house to do some work around the house, and they did a good job, and I got a fair price, and I was satisfied with the work. The only problem that I had was that after they did that job and I paid them and we were settled up, they would not leave me alone after that point. And so I kept getting phone calls over and over and over, and they'd say, "We'd like to sign you up for more service. We'd like to renew that. We'd like to put you on an annual plan for us to come out on a regular basis." And I would say, "Listen, would you please take my number out of your sales database? Would you please, you know, stop calling?" And I'd block the number, and then they'd call from a different number, and they really liked me as a client somehow, you know. I was satisfied with the work, but I can't recommend them to anybody else because of the way that their representatives kept being so pushy with me. On the other hand, sometimes you have a great customer service experience, right? Sometimes you get such great service, you get such great attention, such great follow-through and attention to detail, or they resolve a problem so well that you just can't help but tell other people about the great experience that you had. If you use an online review site, something like Yelp.com, and you look around at the feedback, check out the feedback on any of our local restaurants, and you'll find that some of the feedback is about the quality of the food. Sometimes the feedback has something to do with the atmosphere, the environment that they've created inside that restaurant, but many, many times the feedback is about people. The feedback that you'll see is about the people that customers encountered when they visited that business. And if you're a manager, you understand how important it is to train your people, because you know that the reputation of your company is at stake. If the business gets reviewed based on the way that its people treats the customer, then you want your people to treat the customer really well. And in the same way, if you're a follower of Jesus, the way that you interact with the world has an impact on the way that your community sees God. Now, you may be in the room this morning and you're not a follower of Jesus, and I just said that sentence and you thought to yourself, "Well, he's not talking to me. I'm talking directly to you," because you know exactly what I'm talking about, don't you? You know, if you're someone who hasn't made the decision to become a follower of Jesus, and you're kind of standing on the outside of Christianity and the Christian culture and looking in, you know what it means and what a difference it makes in your perspective when someone who claims to be a Christian behaves in a way that makes you think, "That doesn't look like Christianity at all to me." It'd be one thing if they weren't religious. It'd be one thing if they didn't claim to be a follower of Jesus, but when you see someone who identifies themselves as a Christian acting as if they're not, it makes you question the entire thing. And so my hope is, my dream is that as we've worked our way through this message series, or as you catch up on this message series over the next few days and weeks, as we've talked about being representatives for God here on earth, my hope is that this has been a bit like a training session for us to remind us of some of the core values, some of the essential tenets that we want to live by as we participate in the mission of God, some of the core values that God wants the community around us to see in the lives of Christian people. And we're not just talking about following a bunch of obscure rules. In fact, we're not talking about that at all. We're talking about living according to the one simple rule, the one simple command that Jesus introduced on the night before he was crucified. Let me remind you what he said. John chapter 13, Jesus said, "A new command I give you, love one another." It's complicated, right? Well, it's not complicated. It's not easy, but it's not complicated. He says, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." He's speaking to these people who have been following him for about 3 years, speaking to these people who have spent time listening to his teaching and watching him heal, watching him exercise power over storms and natural forces, illness, disease, disability, and they're looking back. They're reflecting. I'm sure that it all raced before their minds in just a moment as they thought about all of their experience with Jesus and thinking about the way that he had loved them, thinking about how he had calmed the storm when they were afraid for their lives, that they would drown in the boat that night out on the Sea of Galilee, thinking about the times that he provided food when they were hungry, seemingly out of thin air. Thinking about the way that he loved them, and he says, "As I have loved you, so you must love one another." And by this, when people see this evidence, they will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. See, I told you it's not complicated. It's not easy, but it's not complicated. It's simple. The command that Jesus wanted to be ringing in the ears of his disciples as he gave up his life for them was, love one another. Do as I have done for you. And this is the power of love. The power of love is that every act of love points toward the character of God. Everything that is done in love reflects the character of the God who John referred to as love incarnate. And so today, as we wrap up the series, we're going to take a look at how we can prioritize our attention, prioritize our time in order to share God's love with the way we use our schedule. Now, I think one of the most universal truths about getting older is that the older you get, the more you realize how precious time really is, right? This week, our country pauses together to honor people who have lost their lives serving in our country's armed forces. There are families in our church, families in our community, our family here who have lost loved ones who died in combat, and we honor you and we grieve your loss. There are individuals in our church who served in the military and they lost buddies that were serving alongside of them, and we honor you and we grieve that loss. Our national history includes the loss of far too many young lives who died fighting for the sake of their country, and we grieve those losses, and the memory of those fallen servicemen and women serve as a reminder to us that time is precious. Last week in both of our Sunday morning services, we honored together those students here at our church, in our church family, that are graduating high school during this month, and those young adults that grew up in our church or found their way to our church by being invited by a friend at some point, and we marked the conclusion of this stretch of their journey. Now, if you walk down the hall down this direction in our building in the children's ministry area, you'll find a display. It's up on top of a piece of furniture. You can see it real easy in the main hallway. It's got a bunch of jars, five or six jars, and each one of them's labeled with a different different age, stage of life for children as they grow. And the jars are full of marbles, except that as they get older, as the age gets older, there are fewer marbles in the jar. Every marble indicates or represents the number of weeks that we have left to influence and guide these children before they graduate and start the next phase of their life. And so all of those graduates we celebrated last week, you go down and look at their jar and it's got two, maybe three marbles left, not very much at all. And their parents are looking back over the last 18 years and they are keenly aware of how precious time is. And in case that's not vivid enough for you, in case you aren't aware of how precious time is, I would encourage you this week to surf over to a website I found called deathclock.com. Any of you seen this before? At deathclock.com, you go and you type in your birthday and you type in your gender and they ask for some information about your body makeup and using those numbers. And they also ask for how optimistic are you, which I thought was my favorite part. And they'll predict for you, realistically, when you can expect to die. It's a little unsettling. And it's unsettling because no matter how old you are, the date that the website gives you feels like it's not very far away. And if you move over and say, you know, I want to see the pessimist answer for this, it's really not far away at all. Time is precious. If you have an analog watch, look at your watch for a moment. Watch that second hand. You can actually watch as that little pointer moves and marks the passage of your life 1 second at a time. And it's at this point you're thinking, and I'm spending this time listening to this guy? You know, I understand. I realize it may be, you may be totally depressed that you showed up at church now. And it's like, after I've said all of that, you're like, thanks a lot, Brock. Thanks for reminding me. But I think our perspective of all of those passing seconds does not have to be discouraged. We might be naturally inclined to focus on our disappointment that time is getting away from us. But I think God is inviting us to a change of perspective so that instead of asking, where did the time go? We start to ask ourselves, what am I doing with my time? How can I be more intentional with the time that I've been given? And I think this is just one more concept that we can learn so much about by looking at the life of Jesus. You see, I think Jesus, of all people, knew that his time on earth was short. I think Jesus, looking ahead at the road that was before him, knew that his time, his ministry, his life on earth was not going to live to a ripe old age. When he started his adult ministry, he knew from the get-go that he was working with a countdown clock. He knew that his life was going to culminate in an arrest and a trial and a crucifixion. Jesus knew that he had limited time. But as we read the stories of Jesus, you would never know that he's in a rush. You would never know that Jesus was panicked. You would never get the impression that Jesus was worried about trying to get a to-do list done. In fact, as we read through the stories of Jesus, we see Jesus stopping to take time for people, even when he had places to be and things to do. He models for us a consistent example of using time as a resource, using time as a tool to convey God's love by communicating the value of the people around him. There's a story in Luke chapter 8, and it's not our core text for the day, but there, it's in Luke 8. When Jesus returns home to his home region of Galilee, and he finds a crowd who has been waiting on him to return. And as soon as he gets off of the boat that it brought him back across the Sea of Galilee, he steps off, and there's this crowd of people, including a man named Jairus, a Jewish leader, who was begging, Jesus, would you please come to my house? My little girl is dying. And there's a rush, and there's commotion. coming and everybody's excited to get Jesus moving that way so he can show up in time and do something about it. And Jesus starts to make his way through these hordes of people trying to go help this little girl. He's being swarmed by the crowd and everybody's trying to get close to him. And somehow, in the middle of all that chaos, somehow he notices one particular touch. He notices that someone in the crowd had touched him, and it turns out to be a woman who had been fighting a major health issue of her own for 12 years. And what I love about Jesus is that in the midst of the procession, in the midst of this effort to go and help this little girl, and in the midst of the groupthink and the panic and the anxiety that everybody around him is feeling in this moment about this child, Jesus stops. And he delays his trip to the man's house. He fought the flow of the crowd. He ignored their noise so that he could listen to a woman's story. He stops so that he can hear the woman that nobody else heard, and he could address her problem. He didn't let the urgency that the entire crowd was feeling dictate his priorities or dictate his response. And that's the kind of thing that happens with Jesus over and over again. When Jesus was entering cities, when he was engaging with religious leaders, even when he was on his way to Jerusalem where he knew that he would be arrested and killed, he stopped to take the time to acknowledge beggars and blind men and people who were disabled, people who were disadvantaged. Even when he had places to be, and even when he had a lot on his mind, he made time for the marginalized people around him. There was another instance when Jesus was visiting the home of two sisters, two women named Mary and Martha. And while Martha was busy with all of the duties that you feel responsible for when you're hosting a gathering, Mary was spending time, maybe in their living area, spending time listening to Jesus. Now, we can all relate to Martha's focus here. In fact, there's nothing wrong with Martha's focus here. If Jesus came to your house, you'd probably want to tidy some things up. Can I get an amen about that? I mean, you know, you'd want to set out some snacks or something. But when Martha expresses her disappointment that her sister is not helping get those tasks done, Jesus commends Mary for taking the time, for making the right choice, he says, and focusing on relationship. Because Jesus understood and wanted us to understand that love takes time. And by that, I don't mean love requires a lot of time to build, although that may be true. But Jesus showed love for all kinds of people he'd never even met. It didn't take him time to build love. It took him time to show love. One of the ways he showed love was by stopping what he was doing, pausing the task at hand, and taking time to invest in the relationships with the people around him. And one of my favorite examples of this, and it's retold by three of the four gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but it's recorded once in Matthew chapter 19, which is where we'll be this morning. If you've got a Bible with you or the Bible on your Heritage app, you can use that. Matthew 19, beginning in verse 13. There's this moment when Jesus has been having intense conversation and debate with some religious leaders, and you can cut the tension with a knife in a moment like this. And right then, and Matthew doesn't always tell things exactly in chronological order, but all of the other two writers that wrote about this moment put it in a similar spot. Right then it says, then people brought little children to Jesus. People brought little children to Jesus for him to place his hands on them and pray for them. But the disciples, Jesus' followers, rebuked them. I don't know if they rebuked the children or rebuked the parents, but they tried to get in the way. They tried to stand between these families that wanted to be close to Jesus. And I love this heart from these parents. They have obviously seen something. They have obviously heard something in the message of Jesus that tells them this man has power and he cares, and I want him to pray for my child. I want my child to be influenced by this leader. And Matthew doesn't tell us if any of these children were sick. if any of them were injured, if any of them had a disability, only that these parents were hoping that Jesus would pray for the kids. And I understand the disciples' reaction. They're trying to give Jesus a little space. They can see that something important is going on in this conversation he's having with the religious leaders. They're trying to make sure that that important conversation gets done and that Jesus is able to prove his point, make sure he's done. They're trying to make sure that the crowds don't monopolize all of Jesus' time. But I think there's another reason that the disciples tried to dismiss these families. And I think it's because in that culture, children were so far down the ladder of social value. In their culture, it just wasn't as important for children to have time with Jesus as it was for the adults, especially for those adult men to have time with Jesus. And it's hard for us to imagine that in our culture. It's hard for us to imagine that in this culture that in so many ways revolves around providing education and entertainment and enrichment for our kids. But the disciples instinctively told these parents, you're going to have to come back at a different time. He doesn't have time for you today. Get in line. Take a number. They instinctively told these families that Jesus couldn't be bothered with their request to have their children blessed today. But Jesus overhears the commotion and he flips the script. And he invites these families, you know what? Move the rope line. Bring them in here. He invites them to come a little closer. In verse 14 says, Jesus told them, let those little children come to me and do not hinder them. For the kingdom of heaven belongs to such as these. Such as who? Can you imagine? I try to picture this in my mind's eye. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you have to just let your mind wander and daydream about what this moment might look like in the narrative of Scripture. And when I let my mind wander and I picture this scene and I imagine Jesus sitting on a little stone wall, and I picture somebody handing him an infant. No diaper. Just an infant. And it's messy. They spit up. And I imagine Jesus smiling. And I imagine a couple of little rambunctious toddlers that are running circles. And they're squealing and screaming. And it's hard to hear what other people are saying because it's a little noisy. And I picture a little boy picking up rocks and throwing them. And I picture his big sister rolling her eyes. And she can't believe mom and dad made her come visit this rabbi guy today. And I imagine Jesus watching the whole scene and participating in that entire moment and enjoying every minute of his time with these little energetic personalities. He wasn't in too big a hurry. They didn't need to take a number. They didn't need to go to the back of the line. They needed to come up here. Because the kingdom of God belongs to such as these, he says. He made time for the children because they were important. They were just as important as everybody else in the crowd. And in the next verse, Matthew says that Jesus placed his hands on the children. And he reached out and he offered a blessing for the children. And in a culture that treated kids with much lower significance, you can imagine in your heart what it must have felt like to these parents for Jesus to take the time, for Jesus to make time for them that day. He made it clear through his actions. He made it clear through his priorities, through putting his hands on the heads of these children and blessing them with his prayer. He made it clear that the children had worth and value and significance. And maybe you can read between the lines and realize that this passage is not just about kids. This passage is not just about children. This is a recurring theme that shows up over and over, time and time again in the life of Jesus, where Jesus had the time, he made the time, he gave the attention, even to those that the world saw as weak and unimportant. And it makes me wonder if Jesus was to just tag along with me, if Jesus was to hop in the truck with me on my way to work or on my way to drop off my son at school on the way to the office, if Jesus was to be with me and to walk in with me, if I go to Starbucks and get a coffee, or if I have lunch with somebody at a restaurant, if I sit at my desk and return the voicemails that I received while I was away, if I wave at my neighbor while I'm out at the mailbox, I wonder if Jesus was to follow me around through the course of just what I would call a typical day, if he would be in as big a hurry as I am to get all the things done. If he would be thinking about the to-do list as often as I do, if he would be worried about getting on to the next thing, my suspicion is that we would probably linger at the Starbucks counter a little longer. My suspicion is the phone calls might not get down to business quite so quickly. My suspicion is that conversation at the mailbox would be more than just a, hey, how you doing? But that Jesus would take the time, that Jesus would make connection, that he would be having conversations and he would be asking good questions, and then he would actually be listening to the answers without thinking to himself, the game's about to come on. I need to get back inside. I think he would be taking more time. In fact, when I really think about it, if I press my imagination into this scene, this imaginary scene where Jesus is visibly walking through every day with me, if I think about it real hard, I imagine Jesus would probably see people I've never seen before. That Jesus would probably see people that I pass by on a regular basis but don't even notice, because they're just part of the scenery. They're just part of the backdrop of the preoccupied, self-centered routine that I live. I think Jesus would walk through my life as people are serving me at restaurants and offices and grocery stores, and I think he'd find a way to serve in the midst of all of that. And that's because Jesus was constantly living out the love of God. And love takes the time to care for others. Love slows down. Love prioritizes people over projects. Prioritizes quality over quantity. It prioritizes connection over completion. Love slows down. And it takes the time to care for others. And God has invited me, and he's invited you to be a part of this project. He's invited us to walk around the community, to walk around North Fort Worth and Tarrant County and Denton County and Wise County and all the other places that we go on a regular basis around here. He's invited us to walk around here with eyes that are open, looking for opportunities to show love. He's placed us in families and workplaces and sports leagues and book clubs and neighborhoods and cities full of people who need to know that they're worth something, who need to know that they're valuable. He's placed us in communities full of people who often feel unseen and unheard and unnoticed. And I've just got so many distractions, don't you? I just got so many distractions. It's like walking around wearing blinders, and all I can think about is what's right in front of me and the to-do list, the notifications that keep going off on my phone. So many distractions that we can sometimes overlook the opportunities right in front of us to let the love of God overflow out of our hearts into somebody else's life as he continues to pour into us over and over and over. And so this morning, as we wrap up this message, as we wrap up this series of messages, I want to ask you to reflectively ask yourself, what would this look like for me? What's the next step that I could take to help people, to help more people in my life feel valued? Especially the people who are on the margins. What's the next step that I could take to start seeing people that have just become part of the scenery, part of the backdrop in my life? It's possible it might need to start in your own home. Possible it might need to happen around your dinner table, and that might start with actually gathering around the dinner table, making time to listen to one another. It might require that you agree with one another to leave the cell phones in a different room. It might start for you in the line at the convenience store, the place where you stop every few days and fill up the car and you get coffee on your way to work. It might start with asking the name of the cashier and really inquiring about how the day is going, and when they say it's going fine, because that's what every customer asks, you stop and you press in on that. Tell me about what's making it go good. Tell me about how people are treating you today. And then listening to the answer. It might start at the gym where you go work out and you showed up with a purpose and you got limited time and you got dressed for it and you packed for it and you came ready and you're focused. But there are these employees there who could use an encouraging word. Your routine is unique. I can't tell you what the schedule is going to look like for you. You're going to have to look for these opportunities on your own. But together, we can start praying, God, would you open our eyes? God, would you show us the people who have not had this love overflow obviously into their life to the point that they've recognized it? Can you help me, Father, to see the people who have become part of the backdrop of my life? Open my eyes to the opportunities that you have already placed in front of me. You know, as you read through the scriptures, it reminds us frequently that our lives are temporary. In Psalm chapter 90, verse 12, Moses prayed that God would teach us to number our days that we might gain a heart of wisdom. When James, the brother of Jesus, wrote about his faith to a group of early Christians, he said, "What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes." We all know that life is short. You didn't need me to tell you to go to deathclock.com to be reminded that time is marching on. You knew that before you showed up today. But there is a way for us to make sure that our time on earth counts. And it happens when we use the time as a tool, when we use the time as a resource, when we use our energy and our focus to share the love of God that has been shared with us. And the power of love is that it doesn't run out. The power of love is that you can give it all away and you'll never come up short. The power of love is that every bit of love that flowed through you was meant to be given away so it could make room for more love to come into your heart. That's the power of love. And if you haven't experienced that kind of love, I want you to know it. I want it to change your life too. I hope it starts here this morning as you're in community with a few people who have experienced it. But more than that, I want you to have a direct connection with the God who is love and who loved you so much that he gave his son so that you could be with him forever. And so this morning as we wrap up, we've got volunteers who will be ready to introduce you to that Lord, who will be ready to help you take a next step in faith. And all you have to do is walk out these doors, go to the left and find a place called the Hub at the end of the hallway, and we'll help you take the next step. We're going to sing together. But I hope that as you walk out of here this morning, that the power of love continues to change every step you take and continues to influence every interaction that you have, because that is what Jesus did for you. Let's sing together.